A pleasant Wednesday evening. It is 6 minutes after seven. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday night, June 12th, 2019. And this is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. In about 20 minutes tonight on Ozarks, John Brummett, political writer with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics, discuss fathers, grandfathers, and last week's 75th anniversary observance of D-Day. A reminder that KUAF's Summer Night Swing is coming back later this month with live blues at the Fayetteville Public Library. We're celebrating our long-running Friday night program, The Generic Blues Show with Paul Kelso. We'll have a live broadcast with performances from Buddy Shute and the Motivators and Jesse Dean. This takes place Friday night, June 28th, beginning at 7 at the Fayetteville Public Library. You can listen to the broadcast right here on 91.3, or join us in person at the Fayetteville Public Library by supporting KUAF this month at supportkuaf.com. Beer from Ozark Beer Company and wine from Keels Creek Winery will also be available at the concert. You can support your public radio station at supportkuaf.com, then look for the space on that page dedicated to the Summer Night Swing to receive your tickets. The city of Fort Smith is looking for a new partner for animal impoundment services. City directors decided to go in another direction with the contract after the Hope Humane Society upped their request from the city from about $300,000 annually to $650,000. You can hear more about that shelter's impending closure in our interview with Hope Board Vice President Storm Nolan that ran on Monday's show. Just go to ozarksatlarge.com. Ozarks at Large's Susanna Sitek also spoke with City Administrator Carl Gefkin, whose city directors tasked with reviewing proposals from organizations interested in offering a shelter for Fort Smith's animals.
What are you looking for out of impoundment services or additional assistance?
What we're looking for is an entity that is well-run, efficient, that will work with our animal control department, that is in the police department, and that we work together to try to reduce the amount of strays, reduce the amount of need for impoundment, because, you know, this is a cost that is something that if we do the right thing, we can reduce the number of stray animals, stray dogs and stray cats, and thereby reduce the cost to the city. And the board has given me the direction to look at an animal license while looking at animal impoundment.
Right, and I was going to ask about the licensing fee. There was an animal advisory board that worked on that. Where does that all stand? Because they started kind of last year and worked on that for a few months, and I know the board hasn't really taken that up.
You know, with everything that's been going on with the contract with Hope and with the fact that it had also the license and the contract at one point somehow became connected, but now they're disconnected. There was so much happening that to try to settle one without the other was becoming difficult to do. The Animal Services Advisory Board did recommend a license structure that was free for those animals that are spayed and neutered and microchipped, and $125 if not. And so that will be, it is their recommendation, and as an advisory board, it will be part of the decision-making process as we move forward with our RFEI, and then there will be brought to the board of directors per their resolution directing me to do this work on it to provide a resolution for both.
Fort Smith is the second largest city in the state. I mean, any conversations about the city taking on sheltering, as a lot of cities have done?
Many cities I know in Northwest Arkansas have done it and are very successful at it. I mean, we have visited Rogers, and they have an amazing shelter and amazing organization. The cost for the city of Fort Smith to now start doing this would be anywhere from the low side of $600,000 to at least $1 million if we were to build a building and not find one readily made. Then there's also having the staffing. In the cost, depending if we were holding 100 or 200 animals per day, could be anywhere between $1 million and $1.5 million to run the operation. So that money would need to come from somewhere, and we have been very good at saving money in the general fund and in our other funds to put to work, and probably some of it to help our flood victims. But at the same point in time, if we can find a nonprofit that's willing to do the work and we work with them and it is cheaper to the city and its residents and probably a much, and knowing the organization, I should say organizations that have been interested in providing that level of support to the city, they're well run. And so I think that is what's best.
What is the city's responsibility in its, in the way pets are kept by its residents?
Well, that's, it's interesting. Arkansas law does not require a city to do animal control. So we don't have to do it. However, I would think all of our directors and much of our residential residents agree that no city wants to have stray animals running up and down thoroughfares and side streets or operating in packs, because that in itself would not, could be dangerous, especially if a dog ran into a street and was hit, or somebody was driving and they had to swerve because of it. And as the second largest city, it that would not portray Fort Smith in its best light. So, frankly, I think the board and I agree with them, think it's the right thing to do. And that's why it's been a long road to try and find an organization either inside the city as part of the city or as a nonprofit that is both incredibly well run, because that's what we would want, and then at a reasonable cost that our citizens would be willing to accept as part of the budget. And I think by doing this RFEI, that's what we will get.
I know this was brought up in one of the meetings that perhaps HOPE should have consulted the city before becoming a no-kill shelter. Is that something that they should have consulted the city about?
There are plenty of woulda, coulda, shouldas to go along with this. And at this point, I'm just trying to look forward and say, this is what we can do. The board has given, board of directors has given me clear direction. We have many people in town who want to see the city do the right thing by our animal population and then also reduce the animal population. And that is our goal. And that's where we're facing, because we're facing forward, not backwards.
There was an animal licensing agreement brought up years ago. I mean, should the city have done something sooner?
Well, I believe the city of Fort Smith actually did have an animal license, and it stopped. And then around 2012 to 2014, there was the request for mandatory spaying and neutering. And that was a valid and valiant effort to try to achieve this reduction in stray animals. And I think everyone who worked on that came from a very good place, because no one wants to see an animal starve or be maltreated or be injured. But again, you know, we also need to recognize what our city residents think is what, on what they think that a city should do and how much they want us in their business. And Fort Smith and the state of Arkansas are very much a state that wants as little government intrusion as possible. So sometimes it takes a certain number of efforts in order to be successful, and but also to understand where that limit lies. And so it's a balance, and that's the balance that the board of directors and the city administration do every day.
Well, thank you for catching us up. I know you guys are dealing with flooding as well, so lots of things going on.
Yes, there are a lot of things going on, and that we're here to serve, and we're going to be doing our best to help with the flood victims and with our animal population.
That was Fort Smith City Administrator Carl Gefkin speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. In a city director's meeting last week, the organization Kitties and Canines already outlined its proposal to shelter and adopt the city's animals. But Gefkin says directors want to hear from other organizations as well. He'll be issuing a request for proposals in the coming days. The Pitts family in Lincoln is the Washington County Farm Family of the Year. The operation is run by three brothers, Seth, Connor, and Alec, who are in their 20s and are the fifth generation to farm on the land. The Washington County Farm Bureau and the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture Cooperative Extension Service sponsor the program, now in its 72nd year. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended a media day at Sugar Hill Ranch yesterday, and she brings us this report.
At 29, Seth Pitts is the oldest of the three brothers who run the farm, and he says he appreciates the honor they've been given.
To get the Farm Family Award after doing the things that we like to do and making changes that we needed to see and what fit, it's a privilege and an honor, and we're thankful for the opportunity that we were given and that we were able to get to this point we are today.
The Pitts brothers grew up on the farm, and Seth took a bigger role in operations after his father died in 2007. At the time, the farm was operated solely by his dad and grandfather. When their grandfather died a few years ago, Seth's brothers were able to help the family business full-time. Seth says he thought he'd do something else for his career, though he didn't know exactly what it would have been.
Thought maybe that Connor and my dad and would just keep on the farm, and I might build a house here and live here and help them when they needed it, you know. But that didn't happen, and I'm glad it didn't happen. I mean, I've got a very blessed life, and this is a great opportunity, and it's a privilege to be able to carry it on, and I enjoy doing it now.
Seth says the farm is run by him and his brothers, and he does not want any more work than they can handle.
I want to grow just big enough to where it keeps us busy and it keeps us a living. But I've never aspired to get so big where we got to hire more people, because that's the key to it is our relationship and how we work together. And when you bring other people, the more people you get involved, and the more people you have to help you, the tensions get higher, the relationships get broken, you know. So no, it's exactly what we three can handle, no more, no less. And that's the way I want it.
According to a press release, this program honoring farming families is the longest running effort of its kind in the nation. Katie Teague, County Extension Agent Staff Chairwoman with the Washington County Cooperative Extension Service, says the Arkansas Farm Family of the Year initiative started in 1947.
The way it works is each county, each of the 75 counties in Arkansas, all nominate. There's a group of different ag agencies. It's Farm Credit Services and the Natural Resource Conservation Service, Farm Bureau, the Extension Service, sometimes the electric co-ops. But there's a committee that forms, and each year decides and names a family of the year for that county. And then there's a judging process. There's different districts in the state that will come tour the farms, talk with the family, look at the operations, and they'll pick district winners. And then those district winners will go on to a state competition and on to a national competition.
She says the Pitts brothers have been really thoughtful in how they manage their family business.
They have close to 600 head of cattle. They cut and bale all their own hay that gets their cattle through the winter. They run 5 poultry houses. And again, are really thoughtful about efficiency and looking toward the future. They're being very conservative in terms of repair and making decisions on where and how they can tweak things to be the most productive, but also very thoughtful.
According to the Arkansas Farm Bureau, agriculture is Arkansas's largest industry, adding around $16 billion to the state's economy annually. While it is an important industry, Teague says it's increasingly difficult to make farming your full-time job.
I would think almost all of it's economics, so land prices are increasing. It's certainly tougher to get started. If somebody in their 20s was just to try and start a farm, it would be a tougher proposition. These guys have obviously managed and expanded and sustained what was before them, but they've also grown it. But it's tough to come in. Equipment is terribly high. Even beginning a poultry house, you'd have to invest and get that loan to try and build the house and the pad. And so there's a lot of cost, upfront cost, to get started. And it's tough to expand. It's just a kind of scale of economies and where we are today.
97% of Arkansas's farms are family-owned. And when the Pitts first started their farm in 1914, it was an apple orchard. The Pitts brothers' grandfather, Roger, joined the family business in 1966. It was at that time that they built the first 2 chicken houses. Roger's wife, Mary Alice, says farming is hard work, but it's a great life.
We had a large garden, and I took care of the garden and gathered it and canned it. But it's just such a great life. It's just such a great life because it's an everyday job, but yet when you want to really take off and do something or take a day off or, you know, you don't punch a clock. And it's just been a great life. And we've raised, I had the one boy and then two girls. And I just can't express how good it is to be a farm wife and raise a family on the farm.
Mary Alice and her husband received the Farm Family of the Year Award in the 80s and says she's proud of her grandsons.
It's real rewarding to see the boys. They're still young. They're still in their 20s, and they've gone through a lot. They had to become adults kind of instantly when their dad died. That Seth had to grow up, and then when their grandpa died, they either had to make the decision to continue on or get rid of the farm, and they chose to try to continue, and they've done a great job.
She says it's an honor her family is being recognized.
I've seen a lot of good farm families receive this award, and it's an honor to be. It seems like farmers are not recognized or looked upon as professional people or anything like that, and they are. The boys have college degrees, and they are professionals because you have to be professional to get along in this world today.
The Pitts have received a certificate recognizing them as the Washington County Farm Family of the Year, and they will be presented with a plaque at the Washington County Farm Bureau's member meeting in September. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And ahead on today's show, great music on stages all over the region. Timothy Dennis gets us prepped for the weekend with a list of music we can see and hear. Plus, Matriarch is staging an interactive event at the Museum of Native American History in Bentonville later this month.
This really is a great time to ask questions of the Indigenous community. The women from Matriarch were really open to dialogue and conversation about allyship and how we are able to build those bridges and work together.
That's still ahead on this Wednesday, Ozarks at Large.
For over 24 years, Community Clinic NWA has served as the medical home for thousands of our neighbors in Northwest Arkansas, providing health care in 14 locations, including Springdale, Rogers, Siloam Springs, Fayetteville, and Prairie Grove. Healthy people, healthy community. CommunityClinicNWA.org. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents the 2019 Forest Concert Series with events each Saturday in June and July. This musical performance series merges national and local acts in the museum's North Forest, where visitors can enjoy live music and dancing under the forest trees and surrounded by art installations by Dale Chihuly and others. CrystalBridges.org for tickets and information. The Fayetteville Public Education Foundation and the Spark Foundation host Let's Have a Ball at Pinpoint tonight, June 12th, beginning at 6 p.m. This evening's pinball fundraiser and tournament, located on Block Street in Fayetteville, will support education and active kids in Fayetteville. More information is available on the Spark Foundation's Facebook page.
Last week's observance of the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion resonates with John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat-Gazette, and Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics. They discussed how little their father and grandfather, respectively, talked, if at all, about their service during World War II. John Brummett says those of us alive now could learn a lesson from previous generations.
The D-Day, the Normandy Beach young American men who were just kind of sacrificed, go out there and face the artillery and the fire to take this beach. Tremendous bravery, tremendous point in history. My own father was a 19-year-old, eighth grade educated kid from rural Howard County who was in the Marines and was on Okinawa, which was the last, and some say the most desperate and horrible battle before the atomic bomb, because next, that was the closest to the mainland. And the New York Times did a piece about how children of this so-called greatest generation never really appreciated, as young children won't, where their fathers had recently been. And by the time they got old enough to ask, they found that their fathers were either too damaged or unwilling to speak about it. And there, in fact, in St. Louis, all these are records, and people are going up there and for a couple $1,000s getting albums made of their father's military records, which I may do. But I wrote a column about quoting Socrates, an unexamined life is not worth living. And I said, and I quoted a friend as saying the single most unexamined life that we can see is President Trump. He is so verbose and always instinctively in love with himself and instinctively disdainful of any detraction or... And I compared that and our generation of verbosity and braggadocio with those damaged men, mm-hmm. of which my father was an example. And that was largely the point of my column. The upshot of it was we wish we had known more, wish they could have talked more, we're sorry we didn't appreciate their sacrifice and their pain. And also, maybe today we could shut up a little bit and talk a little less and be a little more self-examining. That was what I was attempting to convey.
Yeah. My grandfather was in a bomber plane that was dropped bombs on Germany to soften everything up there and was shot down uh-huh. in the English Channel. I did not find that out until after he passed away. I never had a chance to visit with him about that.
And he
never talked about it.
I have had hundreds of responses because on social media, people can link a column and then other people can share it and it's just all over the country. Everybody's saying basically the same thing. What you just said, yeah. A father, an uncle, had an experience. I had a guy said, my dad was at the Battle of the Bulge. I didn't find out till he was on his deathbed that he was. Partly because, you know, when you're a kid in the mid-50s, a baby boom kid, you hear about the war and your dad was in the war, and as I said in the column, it's as distant to you as George Washington. You don't realize it's just in adult age years, 8 years or no time at all between the time of the end of the war and my birth. And it just came to be that we never were able, for various reasons, to talk with our fathers about the historic, painful, scarring experiences that they had. That's too bad.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. They discuss more during that conversation, including the recent dealings between President Trump and the Mexican government. And you can find the extended conversation at talkbusiness.net. This is Ozarks at Large.
Your donation to KUAF helps us pay for the news programming you rely on. From the local newscast during Morning Edition to 1A, Ozarks at Large, and All Things Considered. The fact is, listeners and local businesses pay for the majority of KUAF's operating budget. That means your donation is used to pay for programs like On the Media, Here and Now, and Weekend Edition, too. But there's one thing your money will never pay for on KUAF. It will never pay to broadcast a rumor, suspect fact, or outright falsehood. NPR and KUAF check and check again to bring you the accurate and reliable news coverage that is vitally important right now. You can be confident your donation will go to work on keeping this news coverage on the air for everyone in our listening area. Make your gift today at supportkuaf.com.
We have made it to the middle of another week. This one's right in the middle of the year in June. With me in his office, the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio, is Timothy Dennis. Timothy, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Kyle?
Very good. It's time to talk music.
All right. This weekend has quite a bit of variety to it. Let's start with Thursday night. The next Beer and Hymns will take place at Bike Rack Brewing Company in Springdale.
This is a group sing-along, and it always has a theme.
This theme is going to feature iconic songs of the summer.
Oh, okay. So some Beach Boys stuff?
And, yeah, maybe. And okay. Like, you know, the song of the summer, like that type of song of the summer is what I'm guessing. Beer and Hymns usually benefits a nonprofit in the area. This time they're going to benefit Pride at NWAC with a portion of proceeds.
Very good.
Which is, if you're not aware, an advocacy group for LGBTQ+ students, faculty, and staff.
All right.
That Beer and Hymns will get underway at 6 p.m. Again, that's Bike Rack Brewing Company in Springdale. Also happening Thursday night, John Moreland returns to Northwest Arkansas. This Thursday, he's playing in Bentonville at Meteor Guitar Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are $15 today for that show. They go up to $20 tomorrow.
Boy, that's a bargain at either of those.
That show gets underway Thursday night at 8 p.m. Again, that's Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville. Moving on to Friday night, Smoke and Barrel Tavern is going to have a soul and R&B show featuring Sean Fresh. If you're not aware of who he is, he, again, is an R&B hip-hop artist from Central Arkansas, Little Rock area.
Okay. It was just tears from angels when they're free. And pain was just a lie that brought you close to me. But it's been a long, it's the only time we'll see. If my heart played a song, would you sing a melody? I'm singing your favorite song that you never ever hear. Those nights when you're alone. That show at Smoke and Barrel Tavern gets underway at 10 o'clock Friday night.
And moving back up the road to Bentonville Friday night, Meteor Guitar Gallery is going to have another show, this time featuring a blues and rock artist by the name of Davy Knowles.
Davy Knowles. I am not familiar with Davy Knowles.
He was originally born on the Isle of Man, but now he calls Chicago home.
Okay.
What in the world am I gonna do? What in the
General admission tickets are $12.50 in advance. They go up to $15 on Friday. And that show should get underway at 8 o'clock. Again, Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville. Mm-hmm. Then, happening Friday night over in Eureka Springs, Dan Martin will be at Brews. He is a Tulsa-based singer-songwhere, kind of in the folksy realm.
Right.
And I've seen it rub bone dry. And I've seen it give and take. And I've seen it kill and shake. It's caught and washed my tears. And it makes and breaks my fears. And it's held me holding the one. And it's caught me when holding none.
That show at Brews gets underway at 7 o'clock Friday night.
I really like Brews. And if you get the right place to sit when you're looking at the stage, you can look out at the corner and just watch Eureka Springs go by at the same time.
It's kind of a small stage,
yep.
Isn't it?
Yep.
Pretty intimate.
Yes, it really is.
Also happening in Eureka Springs, a show that may not be quite as intimate. Mm-hmm. It's the next Alt at the Odd concert. This time it's going to feature White Mansion.
Uh-huh.
You have to be scarred to be a romantic.
But also on that show, Barbarians of Tomorrow will perform. They're a synth pop rock band from Eureka Springs. It is at the Odd in Eureka Springs, has a $10 cover, and should get our way at 8 o'clock Friday night. Moving on down to the south to Fort Smith, the Eric Matthews Band will be at Harry's Downtown, mm-hmm. A Fort Smith-based blues rock band. Cover for that show is $5, should get on our way at about 9 o'clock. Again, that's Harry's Downtown Friday night in Fort Smith. Moving on to Saturday, Weston Watson in Fayetteville is going to have a songwriter showcase. It'll feature Neon Glittery, No Sweater, Space Pirate, and more local songwriters. That should get on our way at 9 o'clock. Again, that's Saturday night, Weston Watson in Fayetteville. Then, still in Fayetteville Saturday night, Quint Opus is going to be at Phoenix Gallery.
This is their first ever Arkansas performance?
Yes, they're from New York originally, although
right.
Members of the band are in town this summer as part of the summer jazz camps at the U of A.
And Chris Teal, one of the members, lives here now.
Exactly.
He's part of the U of A faculty.
Thank you. That show has a $10 cover. It, again, is at Phoenix Gallery in downtown Fayetteville. Should get underway at 7:30 Saturday night. Also happening Saturday night up in Bentonville, the next Forest concert will feature The Works, W-E-R-K-S.
Tell me about The Works.
They are an Ohio-based jam funk dance band. To give you a little bit more of an idea of their sound, Friends of the Family will open the show.
Oh, okay, very good.
So think jam rock.
Right.
Tickets for that show are $12, $10 if you're a member of Crystal Bridges. If you're under 18, you get in for free. Everything gets underway at 7 o'clock. Again, that's at Crystal Bridges Saturday night. Also happening Saturday night, but over at the Buffalo National River.
Oh, yes.
It's the annual National Park Radio Concert at Steel Creek Campground. And you went to this a few years ago.
I went the first time they did it, and it was phenomenal. There's the big bluff behind them. They're on stage. Everyone's dancing. It's just a fun, fun time. And, of course, they're a great band.
The lights strung up and down all the houses in the town bring a feeling that I just can't deny. It's the common ground we seek, even though we're all unique, like each snowflake as it falls from the sky. It's a beautiful time to leave our differences behind. With the moonlight on the snow, I see.
And it's free too.
Yes, it is.
Everything gets underway at 6 o'clock. Again, that's at Steel Creek.
Right. There is parking there, but
they suggest you get there early because it fills up pretty quickly,
right,
apparently.
The year we did it, we just didn't even try that. We parked about a mile away and hiked in.
Which I can think of much worse places to hike a mile into.
Yes, right.
Again, that is at Steel Creek Campground. Gets underway at 6 o'clock Saturday night. Moving on to Sunday, the next show as part of the Mountain Street Stage Series at Fayetteville Public Library is going to feature the Ashton Barbary Band.
Fun.
It is free. Starts at 2 p.m.
She's fantastic.
She's amazing. Also happening Sunday night, up at the Walmart Amp in Rogers, Steve Miller Band and Marty Stewart are going to be on stage. Yeah, kind of an interesting combination there.
Yeah.
A little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll.
Steve Miller Band, they like make an annual pilgrimage to the Amp, don't they?
It seems like they are now. Because this is at least the second or third time they've been there.
Get on a jet airliner and get here.
Yeah. Fly like an eagle.
There you go.
Lawn seats for that show.
Abracadabra, here they are. We could do this all day.
Take the money and run.
That's right.
Speaking of money, lawn seats for that show are $35. They go up from there. It starts at 7 p.m. Sunday night.
I wish I had one more title, but I don't.
Well, you're such a joker, Kyle.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you.
Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. I want to fly like an eagle to the sea. Fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me.
The accolades continue for the University of Arkansas Women's Track and Field Program. Arkansas's Lance Harder and Chris Johnson have been named National Coaches of the Year for the 2019 NCAA Division I Outdoor Track and Field season, as announced yesterday by the U.S. Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association. It's the third time Harder has been named National Women's Outdoor Coach of the Year. He also earned the honors in 2000 and 2016. First time Johnson has been named National Women's Outdoor Assistant Coach of the Year, following his National Women's Indoor Assistant Coach of the Year award in 2018. He is also the first coach from the SEC to win that honor. The Arkansas women won the Outdoor National Championship last weekend in Austin and captured the national indoor title earlier this year. And the Arkansas baseball team opens up play in the College World Series Saturday night in Omaha. Arkansas will face Florida State for a scheduled first pitch at 6 on ESPN. Win or lose, Arkansas's next game will be Monday. A loss Saturday night puts the Razorbacks in the Monday afternoon loser's bracket. A win Saturday night would mean a Monday night game in the winner's bracket.
Support for 91.3 comes from Arcom Plus, providing digital and offset printing, graphic design and promotional items, and a variety of business services for jobs of all sizes. Located just off College Avenue at 461 East Township in Fayetteville, Arcom has been locally owned and operated for over 30 years. Printing NWA.com or 444-7711 for more information. Walton Arts Center presents the 10th annual Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, June 10th through the 29th, welcoming artists from around the world with performances, activities, and events at locations across Northwest Arkansas. Featuring the return of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, Trail Mix, and more. Tickets and event lineup at artispherefestival.org. Little Wing Productions presents country-based rock artist Nitty Gritty Dirt Band to the auditorium in Eureka Springs Friday, September 6th. Show starts at 7:30. A limited number of reserved tickets go on sale this Friday, June 14th at 10 a.m. at 888-695-0888 or online at theauditorium.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Museum of Native American History in Bentonville will host the Intertribal Indigenous Women's Group, Matriarch, on June 22nd for a series of interactive events. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich brings us this report.
Sarah Adams Cornell, a member of the Choctaw Nation, is co-founder of Matriarch, based in Oklahoma City and housed at the Muscogee Creek Association. A second chapter operates in Tulsa. The group was established 5 years ago, she says.
It came about because of conversations that myself and the other co-founder, Kendra Wilson Clements, had been having with other women in our community, specifically around suicide of our youth, domestic violence situations in our community, and really not having a lot of resources for our women to get help, to learn tools to basically save ourselves.
Members hail from 50 tribes. Matriarch promotes the social welfare of Native women through education, community building, and direct services to create positive change within their communities.
We're very intertribal. While we are, we ask that all of the women identify as Indigenous women. We don't ask for CDIB cards or tribal membership cards. It's purely off self-identification.
By the way, CDIB stands for Certificate of Degree of Indian Blood Identification Card, issued by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Matriarch works to raise awareness in communities of both the accomplishments and struggles of Indigenous women. To that end, Matriarch will facilitate a workshop and performance art event Saturday, June 22nd, at the Museum of Native American History, MONA for short, in Bentonville.
We will be offering two separate events in one day. And so the first part of our day will be a workshop where we are going to be talking about scarves and the symbolism of this clothing item, both in activism and in fashion and in culture. And these scarves, these handkerchiefs, have really been used in a lot of ways throughout history, and specifically for Indigenous people, they're a part of our regalia. They have been used, and you'll see them covering the nose and mouths of people that were at Standing Rock to avoid the tear gas, and they are used in mourning. And so there's this wide scope of uses for this one particular item. So we will be talking about that, and then we'll be creating our own. And we invite the community to come in and be a part of those conversations and then create their own handkerchief. All the supplies will be provided, and it will be just a wonderful, educational, and really fun way to talk about a lot of the similarities between cultures and the use of this particular item.
The evening event will center on the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women movement.
And that is a movement that highlights the crisis happening in Indian country, that our women are so much more likely to be murdered, specifically mothers and mothers in urban areas. And these Our women, these cases are not being investigated. They are being ruled in inappropriate ways that don't help find the people who are committing these crimes, and also don't offer the family justice.
Five Matriarch members will illustrate these grave inequities in a spoken word piece.
Each woman will take one of the letters, the MMIW, and speak about what that means, both personally and to our community as a whole. And it's a performance piece about this really important issue that's happening in Indian country.
Mallory Taylor, a Native expressionist, artist, and muralist from Tulsa, who works at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, is helping to organize the June 22nd event, which is free. Refreshments will be served.
One thing that's important to mention is that this really is a great time to ask questions of the Indigenous community, the women from Matriarch. We're really open to dialogue and conversation about allyship and how we are able to build those bridges and work together to help solve some of the issues that are happening in our community and just to have a better understanding of one another and in our contemporary lives.
Registration is requested. Details can be found online. Search Museum of Native American History. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The University of Arkansas announced this morning licensed practical nurses can now apply for an online program to complete their bachelor's degrees in nursing at the U of A. Classes would begin August 26th. Students can apply online for the LPN to Bachelor of Science in Nursing. Courses will be offered in 8-week sessions. Students can apply for the program each fall or spring. To apply for the program, students must be a licensed practical nurse with at least 2,000 hours of work experience at the LPN level in the last 12 to 24 months. Additionally, 48 hours of prerequisite courses must be completed with a minimum 2.8 GPA before applying. Arkansas rice and soybean farmers are facing an increased threat from pests feeding on their crops this year. Gerald Hardkey with the University of Arkansas Cooperative Extension Service says a mild winter has increased insect populations.
Right now, with what we've come out of as one of the milder winters in recent years, is definitely a noticeable kind of an early uptick in insect pest pressure across rice and soybean in particular.
Hardkey says the increased numbers of pests could cause bigger problems because they are arriving when crops are so young. So far, farmers are focused on monitoring their crops and preparing to deal with the problem if necessary. This, on top of a wet spring, which delayed planting, has added challenges to this year's growing season.
Support for KUAF comes from Westwood Gardens, featuring locally grown plants, offering a variety of annuals, perennials, herbs, roses, trees, and shrubs, selected to perform well in Arkansas's summer heat. More information available at westwoodgardens.com. KUAF is giving away tickets to the 2019 Spaceberry Music Festival, July 4th through the 6th on The Farm in Eureka Springs. This 3-day jam and funk festival welcomes Friends of the Family 10-Year Anniversary Jam, Arkansas, and others. Winners announced Friday, June 28th during Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com to register or for more information.
And this is Ozarks at Large.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. If there's ever a book that you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, you must be the one to write it. Toni Morrison was born Chloe Anthony Wofford on February 18, 1931. Excelling as a student, Morrison would go on to graduate with honors from Loran High School and then attend Howard University, where she earned a bachelor's in English. Seeking her advanced degree, Morrison would go on to attend Cornell University, where her master's thesis focused in a theme of suicide in literary works of Virginia Woolf and William Faulkner. Toni Morrison would go on to become a professor at Howard University and Texas Southern, and some of her pupils included Houston Baker Jr., Claude Brown, and Reflections in Black alum Stokely Carmichael. During the late 60s and 70s, Morrison would leave Howard University and become an editor for Random House, editing works including The Black Book in 1974. The Black Book was a text that combined history and literature from the African American experience. This work propelled Morrison into a career as a distinguished lecturer, and she would teach at schools such as Yale, Princeton, and State University. Along with her prestigious career as an educator, Morrison is a legendary writer. Her first novel, Bluest Eye, was released in 1969 and challenged conversations about Black self-hatred and identity. Her second novel, Suela, was released in 1973 and was nominated for a National Book Award. Morrison would write several other incredible literary works, including Song of Solomon in 1977, Tar Baby in 1981, and Beloved in 1987. Beloved would go on to earn a Pulitzer Prize and lay the foundation for Morrison's Nobel Prize Award in Literature in 2003. In 2006, Beloved would become a film with Oprah Winfrey as the lead character. Morrison would continue to write, exploring life, relationship, and identity in every text. The literary world once again celebrated on February 12, 2019, when Toni Morrison released The Source of Self-Regard, selected essays, speeches, and meditations. Today we celebrate the incredible life and legacy of Miss Toni Morrison.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio, 91.3 in Fayetteville. We're a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. You can hear weekly segments of Reflections in Black on Ozarks at Large, and you can learn more about the series at KUAF.com. Just search for Reflections in Black.
And contributors to this edition of Ozarks at Large included Zuzanna Sitek, Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, and Timothy Dennis. Timothy also produced Reflections in Black, which is hosted and written by Raven Cook, and he mastered today's show. Our conversation between John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics was recorded in the KATV studios in Little Rock. It's provided to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. Additional content today provided by KUAR Public Radio in Little Rock and Central Arkansas. This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Paris. Antoinette Grajeda curates songs that we often play to end our show. That's the situation today. We're going to hear music from Aki and the song Sad Songs. We bring this up because they'll be playing at Harry's Downtown in Fort Smith Saturday night. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7 with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
I know it's been too long since you've been gone and I shouldn't be writing sad songs about you. But on this rainy day, the coffee tastes just a little bit too bitter. And it's foolishness, God knows, 'cause you're not coming back. In hearts like mine, well, they don't break easy. But girls like you seem to get the job done right. So when I'm alone, me and my whiskey, I put on sad
sad songs. It's been way too long. God knows it's been way too long. God knows. If you let me down easy, then while I fall so damn hard, and I know you had to leave me, did you have to take my heart? 'Cause girls come and go. Something from me that I don't have anymore. A heart's like mine, they don't break easy, but girls like you seem to get the job done right. So when I'm alone, just me and my whiskey, I put on sad songs. It's been way too long. God knows it's been way too long. Get the job done right.